The Other Side of the Glass is on.
Oh, my God. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Final hour of the program here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Chris Thomas Sirtle with you until 5 o'clock. Dylan Matthews comes your way then with the hometown take. Make sure you give me a follow on Twitter at CThomasRadio. Got a Twitter live space going right now. Appreciate everyone who's been popping in and out. Going to make that a regular part of the program moving forward. Also, give me a subscribe on YouTube, also at CThomasRadio. Live stream of the show going to be starting up next week. All right, let's find out what our next guest has to think about Chipotle Gate, the Braves, and much more as we head out to the WadeFord.com hotline. Welcome in our good buddy Miles Garrett, reporter and host for Fox 5 Sports. Miles, have you had enough yet? That's my question, because this thing, it's good for us in the content game, but man, oh man, Kirk Cousins is going to fight and scratch and claw every inch until he gets out of here.
Yeah, no, I had to have, Chipotle for lunch today just to get it off my mind. But it goes back to last off season, Chris, really, when you go back to him saying that he was talking to the Falcons with the whole tampering thing. Now it's a new thing with the, you know, potentially being spotted in Cleveland. Of course, none of this has been verified, but it goes without saying that he did respond to that tweet and, you know, he's talking about it. It's out in the open. So there's been rumors going around about whether or not he actually is going to be with the team or if he's actually seeking a trade post NFL draft to avoid another Michael Penix Jr. situation. I think it's all kind of unknown right now, but it's part of the conversation because, you know, the answer is still unresolved at this point. I don't think we'll know about it until perhaps a move is actually made.
Do you think Cleveland eventually budges and moves off there? We're going to wait till you cut him stance. That seems to be their mantra, their MO before now.
You would think, but I think Cleveland's an interesting spot and certainly one that makes a lot of sense. But kind of going back to when Myles Garrett was signed there, the edge rusher, of course, you know, getting the new deal. They talked about the fact that, you know, what was a big part of you wanting to come back? You know, he had said he wanted to be traded. He said that he liked the plan they had at quarterback. Now, to me, that tells me that they're probably going to address that in the draft, whether that's Shedeur Sanders, you know, if Cam Ward falls to them, I doubt he does. But I wouldn't imagine that Kirk Cousins would fire up Myles Garrett like that. But at the same time, it would make a lot of sense to perhaps get a veteran like Kirk Cousins in there to perhaps start for a little bit before a guy like Shedeur Sanders finally takes over. I could see how that would be a scenario. But at the same time, I think we've seen that Kirk Cousins is not a big fan of that scenario. I think he wants to be go to a place where he is the starter at hand and avoid a situation, like I said earlier, where he goes to a team that drafts a rookie quarterback. So unfortunately for him, I think his options might be limited, especially with what Pittsburgh could be doing, but at the same time, you know, it's kind of where he is at this point in his career.
How much do you think they've improved their defense with the moves they've been able to make, bringing back guys like Mike Hughes and then inking Leonard Floyd to a decent contract as well?
Well, right now, I think it's tough to really say because the moves, I think Leonard Floyd obviously is really the newest big addition, but look, Leonard Floyd isn't exactly a spring chicken like he used to be. You know, he is a veteran in this league and has proven to have some pretty good sack numbers. But at the same time, you know, you are replacing different guys like Lorenzo Carter. Obviously, he wasn't exactly what you would hope for, was a pretty decent rusher for this team in years past. But I'm really interested to see what this team does post-NFL draft and see how they eventually add some guys there. And I imagine it's going to be 80 to 90% defensive players, seeing that's how they addressed it at the NFL Combine and how they've been appearing to scout some players as of late. So I'm not sure exactly how that's going to go, but I think it's only fair to judge this after the NFL draft is concluded.
Speaking of the draft, do you think the more prudent move for them is to take the best edge available at 15 or to potentially trade down?
I think for them at this point, it could be to potentially trade down because you have some edge rushers that might be there for a second, but it might be a little bit something that you might have to wait and see because they obviously need to get some picks back due to what happened with the tampering charge with Kirk Cousins last year and just not having a lot of picks in general. I could potentially see them grabbing a guy like Malachi Starks there if he falls into the 20 range. So it could be interesting to see what they do there because I know a lot of Falcons fans, they want to see another Georgia product there like Mykel Williams or Jalen Walker if he falls in their lap. I doubt that he does, but I think that would be a dream scenario.
Any concern for you of the fact that they haven't actually addressed the center position yet?
Well, they seem to have a lot of faith in Ryan Neuzel, or Neuzel, excuse me. I might not be pronouncing his name correctly, but he came in spot duty last season, a couple games, and performed relatively well. I know they're going to miss the presence of Drew Dahlman, but whether or not they address that in the draft too. Again, it was really weird how they seemed to scout the NFL combine. Like I said earlier, they really only had a bunch of defensive scouts instead of offensive scouts, really. So it was definitely an unorthodox way to look at it, but it appears they're going all defense. So they appear to be very comfortable with what they have at center.
Talking all things Atlanta sports, we'll get to some Braves here in just a second. Talking Falcons with our good buddy Miles Garrett. Make sure you give him a follow on socials, covering all the teams here in the A for Fox 5 Sports. All right, do you think that this – I've heard this from a couple. I saw it on ESPN last week, a couple other different outlets as well. Do you think the Falcons need another wide receiver?
Well, now with Rondale Moore gone, I would assume yes, they probably would. Now, they've got a good combo right now with Drake London and Darnell Mooney. I think that was proven last year. You know, whether or not Michael Penix Jr. has that same connection to a guy like Darnell Mooney, you know, it looks like he had a pretty good connection with Drake London those last few games that he started. But I'm sure you do feel a lot better if you add at least one more pass catcher in there that can be a true number three. I would certainly suspect them to address that before training camp starts. I don't know who that might be. You know, they may take a flyer on a free agent before training camp actually starts. You know, there's going to be cuts, of course, and they'll bring in guys like they've done just about every single year, and they end up being – I mean, again, we go back to Rondale Moore. He was a guy that was added right before training camp started last year before he ended up tearing his ACL. So these things can happen as soon as the season starts. It's just really a matter of when it actually is addressed.
Okay, let's switch over to the Braves now because I got a bunch of questions. 0-2 now out in San Diego. The bullpen blows a lead in the first one and gives up the go-ahead run in the second one, and maybe even more concerning because it was from a guy that you're going to be counting on a lot this season, Dylan Lee, to take a step up in later inning activity. What was your concern level before the season started about the bullpen?
Yeah, I mean, before the season started, and we talked about it in spring training when we were down there in Northport, was that, you know, your two biggest areas of concern is shortstop and the bullpen. And even Alex Anthopoulos mentioned that himself specifically as to, you know, where he thought the biggest holes on this team were, and he specifically mentioned the bullpen. And here we are, two games into the season, and the bullpen's already causing a little bit of struggle. Now, again, Reynaldo Lopez, I think there was a little bit of a concern with his velocity rate. It was a little bit lower than what it was last season. I'm sure he could potentially be an option to be moved there, but you know, this is a guy who was putting up all-star type numbers as a starting pitcher, so they're going to be relying on him to continue that role going into this year, especially with Spencer Strider still not back with the team yet. So they may have to end up grabbing another guy free agent or trade-wise from the bullpen, and it's something that Alex Anthopoulos has really addressed every single year he's been the general manager. I mean, you go back to 2021 when he added all that bullpen help that eventually got them to the World Series, you know, the night shift, as they were famously called. You know, they were, a lot of those guys were before the trade deadline, rather, those kind of acquisitions that he added to improve the bullpen because it just wasn't there before. So whether or not he does that again remains to be seen, but it is something that he's definitely going to have to address if, you know, the results from the first two games continue.
You mentioned shortstop, and Orlando Arcia made it all but one game before Nick Allen got a start. I didn't hear anything as to why that was, other than maybe just a matchup preference. I think he had some decent numbers against the starter, Dylan Cease, for the Padres yesterday. If I asked you, by the trade deadline, will they have a new starting shortstop, your answer would be what?
Ooh, I mean, again, it's only two games, so it's really tough. But, you know, we have to go off of a full season of what we saw last year from Orlando Arcia and really what we saw in spring training, which wasn't all that impressive. So I wouldn't be surprised to see it addressed, but I think we've seen before, Alex Anthopoulos is very patient with a lot of these guys. I mean, remember when there was a time when Marcell Ozuna was one of the coldest batters on the entire team and ended up taking it to another gear and turned in an all-star type performance, borderline MVP. So I'm not saying that that's going to happen with Orlando Arcia, but at the same time, he's shown that he's been very patient with a lot of these guys. But if those numbers from last year keep being more consistent, then he's going to have to make an adjustment before the trade deadline.
Do you expect the NL East to be a close three-team race the entire year between the Phillies, Mets, and Braves?
I would suspect so, just based on a talent perspective. You don't add all those guys like you are in New York and not try to be a playoff contender. I mean, before these guys even came last year, the Mets made a push last year that, you know, they only got better this year. I wouldn't suspect any different. And the Phillies are still the Phillies. They're a little bit older right now, but they still have that core that has made them so dangerous the past few years. So I suspect all three of them to be there when we're back in September, and we're hoping that we don't have another matchup in Philadelphia again for the playoffs.
I know that you also cover the Bulldogs from time to time as well. What have you made of Kirby's comments this offseason about how he's having a little bit of difficulty with some of the younger players in terms of coaching them hard and getting messaging through? You think this is a result of the social media age, the athlete empowerment age, or is this specific class just a little bit harder to coach?
I think it's the combination of the first two things you said. I mean, I think it's funny going back to a quote that Matthew Stafford had, at least from his wife, I think it was a couple of years ago, talking about how it's a little bit harder for him to relate to, you know, some of his new teammates because they're just that much younger than him at this point. And it's just a different generation. Whether or not Kirby Smart is too affected by that, I don't think he is, as a matter of, you know, when these guys are firmly in his program and learn from some of the older guys on the team that this is the way things operate. And obviously his track record proves that with the amount of NFL talent, national championships he already has under his belt. So I wouldn't suspect this to be a problem for Kirby Smart, but I do think it is definitely a reflection of just the new generation. I mean, things are changing in college football, and so are the athletes.
I don't know if pressure is the right word, but maybe expectations for Gunnar Stockton to come right in and, you know, be the heir apparent to Carson Beck and Stetson Bennett before him. Everything you hear from Kirby, he loves his attitude. He loves his leadership. It may not be vocal and rah-rah, but do you feel like Gunner's going to come in and have a seamless transition?
I would suspect that there'll be a quarterback competition, no doubt, with Ryan Puglisi. He's a very talented quarterback that has a lot of potential in this Mike Bobo offense. But I would suspect this to be Gunnar Stockton's team, at least for the time being, just because of his knowledge of the playbook. Kirby Smart and Bobo both place a lot of emphasis on that, just having that seasoned person who understands the system, understands how things operate there. Gunnar Stockton obviously has been there for a while now and has a lot of connections with Kirby Smart and Mike Bobo dating back to his high school days up there in North Georgia. So they're very familiar with him. They know how he operates. His teammates certainly love him. You know, they added some good quotes there when he was throwing to his guys in Athens for their pro day. But, I would suspect that it would be a good transition. It's just a matter of if he can take that next step and make them a competitive team for the national championship again, because we only got a short glimpse of it in the college football playoff against Notre Dame. But from what we saw, for a guy making his first career start, that wasn't so bad.
All right, Miles, appreciate the time. As always, we'll make sure to check you out on Fox 5 and on socials as well. We'll see if the Braves can get things rolling.
Thanks, Chris. Take care.
All right. That is our good buddy there, Miles Garrett from Fox 5 Sports. When we get back, let's talk some college hoops, shall we? I think Duke is the best team in the country. I think they're going to win it kind of easily. We'll see if DeShaun Tate agrees with me. I know his Sparty may have something to say about that. Noel, I don't know if you saw this. Coach Izzo was like borderline crying at the end of the game last night. I don't know why. We'll ask DeShaun about that as well. Tears of a clown from Coach Izzo. We'll talk about all that and more next. Give me a follow on Twitter at CThomasRadio. Got a live stream going right now. And then starting next week, I'll be on YouTube as well. Subscribe to the channel at CThomasRadio as well. Coming back with DeShaun Tate, Chris Thomas with you till 5. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game, Odyssey app.
The other side of the glass is on.
Oh, my God. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game.
Rolling along with you on a Saturday. Chris Thomas with you till the top of the hour. Dylan Matthews takes over then. He is in the building rocking and rolling and ready to go. And so is our next guest on the WadeFord.com hotline, DeShaun Tate. Tate's Take Hoops on the Twitterverse. And that's where you can find me as well at CThomasRadio. Got a Twitter Spaces up and rolling right now. Appreciate everybody who's jumped in and out. Had a bunch of people so far. And then give me a subscribe on YouTube as well. Also at CThomasRadio, going to have a live stream up and ready for you on the shows moving forward starting next week. DeShaun, let's start with your Sparty. For those who don't know, Deshaun is a big Michigan State fan. Good win last night here in town, but why was Coach Izzo almost doing the waterworks last night after the game?
Yeah, I just think that, and thanks for having me on, by the way. I just think that it's a matter of, you know, when you, I guess, just kind of grind it out, and you know, he'll oftentimes remind you that this isn't one of his better, or I guess just more talented teams, but one of the more connected teams, I guess. And then obviously, you know, there's just so much pressure between people telling you that you don't have it anymore and that you, you know, don't want because you're not willing to do things the way everybody else is doing things, whether that be NIL, whether that be transfer portal, and, you know, you just wanting to continue to, you know, stick with your guys and show the loyalty to you have to your players. And, you know, it's been a struggle. It's been a little bit of a wild ride. I mean, you think about it, they come into the season, you know, unranked. Outside on the outside looking in on the top 25, and you know, lose some games and along the way early, and then kind of get kind of hot, and then obviously you're, you know, now in this season the you know, the got the most wins amongst any coach in the Big Ten, and you know, the worst shooting team in the country from the perimeter. I mean, there's a lot of different layers to the onion, I think you can say, and I think this has been in a very emotional moment and ride for Coach Izzo and his team, especially with a lot of the criticism that they probably have been getting too. So I think it's just a combination of happiness and putting it in the faces of I told you so, knowing that you can do it, believing you can do it, your team believing that they can do it, and everybody having one another's back, willing to, you know, run through a brick wall for each other.
Before we get to the other game at State Farm last night, which may have had an eventual champion in it, Houston, they scraped by Purdue 62-60, knock down, drag them out type of game. But can they score enough to get past this round?
Houston, you're talking about?
Houston, yeah.
I mean, I think so. I mean, Tennessee is definitely an improved. Both of these teams are historically known as teams that rely on a tough defense, defensive anchor, you know, heels in the sand, muck it up if they, you know, need to, and that's just their preference of play style and everything else. But they've also added some offense to their primary defensive teams over the years and things like that. And, I mean, listen, I took Houston on my bracket to win the national championship this year, well overdue for a Hall of Fame coach in Kelvin Sampson. And, you know, but, you know, some of that is, I believe, Rick Barnes being maybe a little vulnerable to being outcoached sometimes. And, you know, congrats to them to get all the way to this point because, you know, it's still very much a Houston team that from a roster construction standpoint doesn't look much different than the previous Tennessee teams has, but both these guys got Final Four experience under their belt. So it's gonna, you know, I don't know what the over under is just yet. You might want to take a look at that. It's probably 103, kind of somewhat jokingly, facetiously, but right. Probably not much more than 112.
Yeah.
And it's gonna be a grind out type of game. It's gonna be physical. I like Houston in that one, but they've got real grown men over there. They're not the tallest team in the country, but they've got real grown men, and they're extremely physical. You like smash-mouth basketball, the closest thing to you can get to a football game, but on the basketball court, yeah, that's going to be the Elite Eight tomorrow when you see Tennessee and Houston and Indianapolis.
Yeah, I love it. That's why I called this one a knockdown, drag-em-out battle versus a good Purdue team that just came up a little bit short. All right, what is going to stop Auburn from winning the title?
For starters themselves, I think sometimes they get out to a little bit of a slower start. I think we saw that in some examples on yesterday, last night against Michigan. Even more so, I think we even saw that in the first round against Alabama State where they appeared to have struggled a little bit. Sometimes, I don't know, something tells me that they're not taking, you know, their opponents or just their approach to March is a little bit different. I've, you know, just makes me feel like they're not taking it as serious. I mean, listen, I've been in around those guys and in locker rooms and practices and shooting rounds over the course of the last few days. And I mean, granted, you know, I don't want to badmouth them. If anybody can have a little bit of a longer leash in terms of its comfort and a little bit of cushion and able to go out there and have some fun and still, you know, kick the doors down against whatever team's on the other side of them, it is Auburn, and they're the, you know, overall number one seed here, and it's for a good reason. They got a lot of size over there, let me tell you. So, I mean, again, you know, but some of that I think is an extension of the coach. We already know how kind of quote-unquote, for lack of other words, wild that Bruce Pearl can be. Phenomenal coach, by the way, I can say that. But I do think that he has some Rick Barnes in him a little bit in terms of being able to be out-coached. So between those couple things, I think that, you know, that those are some of the reasons. And I don't, you know, let me just make one thing clear real quick. I'm all about players, you know, not having to be buttoned up to the neck all the time and guys being a little bit loose and stuff like that. But it kind of sometimes feels like there is a sense of, I don't know, it just kind of feels like they're not really taking some of this as serious, which even is a credit to them even more so, because if they're not taking it this serious and they're whooping teams the way that they are, they just must be that damn good.
Talking all things March Madness as we continue tonight. Two really good games we're going to get into in just a second. Give Deshaun Tate a follow at Tate's Take Hoops on Twitter. Stay up to date on all the latest with the tournament. All right, Texas Tech, Florida. You talk about a game that could be also knock down, drag them out. We know Florida, how they like to play. They can really play. I don't know if you agree with me on this. Florida can play to whatever type of game their opponent wants to play, or they can dictate the tempo, as we've seen them do both things as well. So what type of matchup do you expect tonight between those two powerhouses?
Yeah, I mean, a darn good one. I know that that Texas Tech likes to muck it up a little bit. You know, ever since Chris Beard's not the coach over there anymore, they've kind of still somewhat held on to that kind of identity, if you will, to being like a defensive-minded team, obviously, with Toppin and Williams over there being the two guys that primarily leading the team, if you will. I just think that Florida has a little bit too much between Richard and Clayton on the perimeter, along with a guy who's got some NCAA tournament, deep runs in the NCAA tournament experience, that being Elijah Martin, the transfer from Florida Atlantic. I mean, it's all about the guard play, and it's all about the experienced guard play. And so, you know, I expect another, you know, pretty tough game. But, I mean, Florida's a team that can blow you out. Alex Condon, I think, might be the X factor in such games, because he is one that is in the front court and definitely is a pretty strong player in the front court and can make all the difference in this game. I do like Florida to ultimately advance.
All right, and the other game, the final game, you want to talk about points. Alabama and Duke, Deshaun, the total for tonight, 174.5. So you're talking about what could be really an explosive contest. For me, I think Duke is the best team in the country. What do you think is going to happen in this one?
Yeah, this is going to be such an interesting game because, you know, Alabama has the horses that they can run out there. They have the athleticism that can match up with Duke. They have the experience, obviously, something that Duke doesn't have. And if you've been looking over the course of since the last time that Duke won a national championship in 2015, that was predicated based off of its freshmen with Grayson Allen and Winslow and Okafor and Jones and all that. We haven't seen that yet again. And Alabama brings that experience, especially got a lot of guys that are returning from the Final Four last year. Like, you think about it. I think I mentioned this once or twice to you, but let me just run it through to you really quickly. You haven't seen a lot of one-and-dones cutting down nets, standing on ladders with scissors in hand and all that since Duke did it. Think about it. In 2016, Villanova didn't have any one-and-dones. 2017, Tony Bradley was the only one for North Carolina, so that's your one. In 18, Nova didn't have any. Virginia didn't have any in 19. COVID didn't have any in 20. Baylor didn't have any in 21. Kansas didn't have any in 22. Villanova didn't have any in 23. And the one that they had was Stephon Castle for UConn on last year, who's a Georgia product. That's two guys in the last 10 freaking years in a decade that could say that they were one and done going on to the NBA and won a national championship. So that doesn't really fit the narrative very well for a team like Duke. But I will say enough to say that, you know what, if there's someone that can replicate and duplicate what Duke did in 2015, it is Duke in 2025. Alabama, I don't expect or anticipate that they'll be able to shoot like that again. I think that'll be really hard to do. It might be enough if they're able to just, I mean, they shot so great that if they just shoot half as well as they did from the perimeter the other night, then they would probably be just fine in advance. But Grant Nelson is a load up front. Everybody talks about Sears. They've got the athletes, but the problem with Alabama, and one of the reasons why I'm taking Duke here, is because Duke brings a little bit better balance on both sides of the ball. I get it, Alabama on offense, their mindset is about winning games, and I understand having more points than the other team at the end of the game is the point. But to me, this time of the year, you got to be able to get stops. They're not nearly as defensively disciplined as I think that they should be, could be, and teams that advance are.
All right, Deshaun, before I let you go, Georgia probably going to lose Asa Newell to the draft and Silas Demary Jr. to the transfer portal. Where does Mike White and his staff go from here after getting embarrassed in the first round?
Yeah, I think it's just about, you know, just about recruiting, obviously, you know, dipping into the transfer portal. He's done a really good job. I mean, just getting better players than he was able than Georgia's typically been able to get. I mean, we're talking about Georgia getting into the NCAA tournament in the year that has been the conference, the toughest conference in the country, by the way. I think that that says something, that speaks volume. That's a selling point for this team. I think that that is I think that that is a step certainly in the right direction. Even if it is just a baby step, it is a step in the right direction. I think that they will continue to improve and do better. Whoever thought that we'd be talking about Georgia, quote-unquote, being the basketball school, and I really hope, I know we're up against it, forgive me for getting long-winded, but I really say this right now, pushing up against the time, because I want Georgia Tech fans to be able to hear me very clearly. Whoever would have thought that we would be having more conversations about Georgia Tech or Georgia being the basketball school in the state than we would for Georgia Tech? I think that that says something about what Georgia has been doing lately and what Georgia Tech has not been doing.
All right, Deshaun, appreciate it as always. We'll continue to follow you throughout March Madness. Appreciate the time as always.
Sounds good. Talk to you soon. Thanks for having me.
All right, that is our College Hoops insider, Deshaun Tate. Make sure you check him out at Tate's Take Hoops. All right, when we get back to wrap up the show here, Kirby Smart talked about something this week that, quite frankly, I didn't even realize was on the table. I'll tell you what that is and more. You'll hear from Kirby coming up next. Chris Thomas wrapping it up with you on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and on the Odyssey app.
Back to Chris.
This is the other side of the glass.
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Last chance for romance here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Chris Thomas Turtle with you till the top of the hour. Dylan Matthews Dylan will be taking over then for the hometown take, leading you into Atlanta United pregame coverage here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Appreciate everybody who's checked out the Twitter spaces today at C Thomas Radio. Had a lot of you popping in and out throughout the show. Appreciate you checking it out. You can give me a follow as well. We can chat all things Atlanta sports. And then make sure you to subscribe to my new YouTube channel. Just put that up at C Thomas Radio as well. Starting next week, there will be a live stream component of the show where you can comment and interact and watch me do my thing and whoever is behind the glass with me as well. So looking forward to that as we hurtle into the 21st century with the modern technology as sports radio and the game is ever evolving. Trying to stay on top of that, so giving you all the different ways that you can reach me. And, of course, I'd be remiss if I didn't say that you need to download the Odyssey app. That should be your numero uno way of checking out yours truly, but just giving you all the options as well. All right. With a few minutes left here, haven't really talked much dogs today. Got in a couple of questions with Miles Garrett of Fox 5. Use the Rewind app on the aforementioned Odyssey app, and you can check out that interview if you missed it. But Kirby Smart met the media this week, and he talked about a couple of really interesting things. First thing I want to let you hear, he addressed the most recent driving incident, and this is what I teased going into the break. I can't believe we have another one of these, but at the same time, I kind of can. It's really sad that what happened, the tragedy from a few years ago that claimed two lives, hasn't become an automatic non-starter when you talk about Georgia players and driving incidents. But, you know, you can't control all these people. Once they leave the campus, it's up to them to make the right decisions. And Nitro Tuggle is the latest one, who's indefinitely suspended now. And we'll see what happens with his future. And Kirby Smart talked about it.
No, I don't believe in ultimatums when it comes to that. I really don't think that's a recipe for the problem. I don't think that solves anything. We'll continue to look at each one of these on a case-by-case basis. And there's things that surround each one of these outside of just the – I mean, the immediate reaction is, how in the world can this happen again? And I get that. But each one in a case-by-case basis – you have to look at it, these are your children, because that's the way I look at it. And I look at what I would do with my children. And there's 18 to 19 to 20-year-olds. They make mistakes. And the consequences that come with those are based on a case-by-case basis.
Yeah, and the thing that's really hard here is to say, you know, hey, Kirby, be the ultimate judge of character here when you're signing these guys. You don't know. A guy could be a perfect citizen in an interview for 15 minutes and in a workout for 30 minutes. But when they get on campus and then take their cars off campus, you can't control what these guys do. All you can do is give them the best tools and the best resources to make good decisions. And if you think Kirby Smart has not poured all of those available resources into his program over the last few years to try to do everything in their power to make this no longer an issue, then you are sorely mistaken. UGA does multiple presentations every year to try to make these kids understand what they're doing when they go out and drive recklessly. Multiple. They make sure they know the history of what went on campus. You can't control these kids. They're kids. You can't control them. So anyone who's trying to blame Kirby, you are sorely mistaken. With that, he also talked about the focus being on the spring and getting the guys ready to go.
So, I mean, we put a big emphasis on running and stopping the run because we feel like we lacked in both those areas last year. So the spring practice has been shifted or adjusted a little bit towards stopping the run and being able to run the ball. I don't know if we've improved on it, but we've harped on it.
Yeah, the offensive line needs to be a lot better. If Gunnar Stockton's going to have a chance, the offensive line needs to play like it did 2 years ago, not last year. Same thing with the defensive line. It's been a little thin since Mr. Davis and Mr. Carter have reached the NFL. Not exactly the same powerhouse-type names on the defensive line. We'll see where Michael Williams falls this year. But even he had an inconsistent career at Georgia. He wasn't as dominant as Davis or Carter. And then Jalen Walker, we'll see where he lands as well. Next up, Kirby was talking about getting everyone up to speed and the challenges that presents.
And some people, they're just not driven like others, right? And our job is to find the right ones. Somebody said to me the other day, like, are you a good motivator? Can you motivate players? And I'm like, well, I'd rather get the ones that I don't have to motivate because they're self-motivated. It's the greatest kind of player to coach.
So it's interesting. Noel, this is something that Kirby's been harping on all offseason long. The freshmen can't take discipline. It's not like it used to be. You need guys that are self-motivated. And that's why I asked Miles Garrett, do you think it's a product of 2025, the social media athlete, the empowered athlete, you can argue the coddled athlete. Is that what we're looking at these days? Is that what has become of college football athletes in 2025? Or is this an outlier? Is this just a year or two where the guys that are the most talented on the board that come to Georgia aren't the ones that are also the most equally motivated? It's tough to differentiate sometimes.
It is. Like, sometimes your most talented player isn't your most, you know, driven or outspoken player. But, you know, I just think it's a generational thing. I think he's hit a new generation of players coming in that have kind of been, you know, probably in their high school programs, coddled a little bit. And they're probably used to, you know, being the big man on campus and being coddled. And they're bringing their energy into Georgia. And that, to me, sounds like Kirby saying, I would rather not have to deal with that energy. I'd rather have people come in here as hungry and ready to go. But sometimes when you get a bunch of five-star recruits that, you know, have been that guy for 4 or 5 years now, it's hard to get that.
Yeah, you can't just walk in to a program like Georgia and expect to run it. Like, you got to earn that, man. The Nick Chubbs of the world, you know, the guys, the Matt Staffords of the world, the guys that went to that program and were tough and were leaders over the years, like, that's earned, man. That's not given. Even Stetson Bennett, for all that it's worth. I mean, damn it, he earned that. Like, he earned every bit of it, all the lore that surrounds him now. And
but that was different because Stetson didn't come in as the guy.
No, like he was kind of the
opposite. And that's
the
difference. He was hungry. You're talking about guys that's coming in here that's been that guy. I got letters and I got trophies and everybody knows my name and I'm a local. You're talking about those guys, not the Stetson Bennetts.
No.
And that's the difference.
And we'll see what happens with those type of guys as the program continues to roll on. A couple of more before we get out of here. Chris Thomas with you for a couple of more minutes. He was once again asked to expand on all these issues going on campus.
It's not been several months. You know, it's been several years in terms of defensive driving courses, having players ride and learn how to drive, just like my two kids did with a driver's service. Josh Brooks has done a tremendous job meeting with every player. And we've had several speakers come in, and we continue to educate. And we're not going to stop at that. You know, it's very unfortunate that you know, one of those young men got his driver's license within 1 month of that happening at 18 or 19 years old. And it's amazing how many kids come to school now without a driver's license. So it's no excuse, but it's one of those things. We will continue to educate and discipline our guys.
See, I wasn't lying. Right from the horse's mouth. They're doing everything they can, guys. They are. Again, once they leave the nest, so to speak, of campus, you cannot control what these guys do. They have to remember their training, remember what they've learned, and most importantly, think about the consequences. Nitro Tuggle could never play it down for Georgia. What if those two new kids come in and they light it up, the transfers, and they just don't need them? Well, too bad. Sucks for you. You went out and you made a stupid decision. All right, one more from Kirby before we get out of here. He was talking about Gunnar Stockton. This is a funny quote. He says, man, if I had a team of Gunners, we'd be ready to go.
I think about if we had all Gunners at every position. You know, they understand the volume of reps, what we're trying to do. He knows the offense inside and out. And then I get frustrated and impatient when other guys don't know it like him. And you have to kind of slow yourself down and say, wait a second, this guy's going through, and I don't know if it's his third or fourth. I'm assuming you're probably right. It may be his fourth. These other guys, they're in their second, their first. I mean, it's just, it's a youthful team, and it shows itself in a lot of ways.
Yeah, perfectly said. And that's what we hope from Gunnar Stockton as he becomes the new face and the new leader of Georgia football, and hopefully has the type of season that we thought Carson Beck was going to have last year before things didn't go the way that everybody thought. Just a closing thought here as we get out of here. I hope this is one of the last times we're going to have to open a show with Kirk Cousins. It's been great for content, and I understand that. And, you know, I love all the passion that everybody brings, the passion that I bring. This thing has just become an unmitigated disaster. It needs to end now, as soon as possible. Just, what are we waiting for? Browns, Falcons, get on the phone. You both need each other. Cut the check. Give them a fourth-round pick, and let's move on with our lives. And then the Falcons can go out and sign some random quarterback, a Drew Lock of the world. That's a Gardner Minshew of the world. That's just sitting out there waiting for a home. And then Michael Penix can really take control of this team. Because until Kirk Cousins is gone, guys, we may be able to focus on Penix here in Atlanta. The national media is going to continue to run with this and is going to continue to spotlight him and the fact that he's still there. So let's do the right thing, Falcons. Let's end this, please, mercifully, so we can stop it. You can stop it. The national media can stop it. And we can all move on from this chapter because it needs to be. It needs to be moved on from. All right, great job to Noel. Thanks for hanging out with me today. Thanks to everybody who called in. Appreciate all your calls. And a special thanks to everybody who checked out my first Twitter Spaces today at C Thomas Radio. Had a bunch of you guys stop in and out. Really appreciate everybody who tuned in. And again, subscribe at C Thomas Radio and subscribe on YouTube at C Thomas Radio as well. Have a bunch of you that have subscribed already. Starting next week, I will be posting live videos whenever I do a show, and I will be able to interact with you in real time. So if you can't comment on the phones at 404-726-0929, you can comment on YouTube, and I'll be able to answer your questions during commercial breaks and in real time, and we can interact and do polls and all that fun stuff as we move. Again, I've been making the joke all show long into the 21st century, into the digital age. Had a lot of fun doing the Twitter Spaces today with you. All right, Dylan Matthews is coming up next. Don't go anywhere. Then we got Atlanta United. Then we got March Madness. It is going to be an absolutely jam-packed Saturday night here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. This has been The Other Side of the Glass with Chris Thomas Turtle. Dylan Matthews taking you through the afternoon.